Section 5 was a method of reapportionment, and that is also obsolete and changed according to the U.S. Supreme Court decision of Barker versus Carr, one person, one vote, rather than geographical areas. And then Section 7, which is old language also pertaining to the old Senate judicial districts. The repeal of Article 14 is recommended because nowadays, after the initial constitution that had to be in there, which gave a description of each House district seat and a description of each Senate district seat, now that is changed by initiatives like this, or it is to change by the reapportionment board and does not have to be put into the Constitution itself. In Section 8, sir, we have here that this will be placed before the voters at the next general election, November 1984.
Thank you, Mr. Martin. I would like to go to Juno, to the other committee members down there. Do either of you have any statements at this time? First, are you still there? Juno, do you copy?
Yes, we do. One moment.
We still have that one person in there.
Yes, ma'am. Okay. You got to watch that thing.
Yeah.
Boy, put somebody on it for you. Are we there, Juno? Did Juno get lost again?
This is one of the Juno moderators, so we'll be calling and seeing what happened up there shortly.
This is Tim and Juno. Can you hear me on this microphone?
We have you now.
We're having a problem with our microphones here. We'll try to get it corrected. Representative Barker has some comments, and I'll try to get a microphone to her in just a moment.
I thought they gave up.
In the meantime, if you'll establish that contact, I would like to go then to Palmer, where Judith Andereg is standing by, I believe. Judith, are you still there?
This is the moderator, and Matt Simmons. Judith has chosen not to speak at this time. I think she is not going to comment.
Thank you very much. I'll go back to Juno again. Are you ready?
Yes, thank you. Can you hear me, Mr. Chairman?
Loud and clear, Barbara.
Thank you. I have just a couple of comments. I have not been a strong supporter of this legislation, but I have read the material that has been provided to me, and I can certainly understand why it will have to be something that we have to look at. Mr. Martin has done a lot of research and evidence. It would appear that historically, and I hate to talk about history because it has been getting kicked around here today, but historically, we cannot allow reapportionment boards to do the things that they have, and it would appear that it's time we do actually lay down some constitutional guidelines as to how it would be done. And I suspect that we all have our own little story to tell. Like in Mat-Su, I would hate to see the representatives have to run from a single member district. We run at large now. It works very well to start cutting our borough up. May put boundaries up, but then that would be one of the things that we would just have to forego for the overall good of the state and the one man, one vote. So at this time, I have found this very informative, and would just like Mr. Martin to know that I'm certainly going to do a lot more work on this bill.
Representative Locker, I'm very pleased that you have agreed with me in philosophy on this particular deal. I believe I heard you say that. Am I wrong in that?
You must have misunderstood me, Mr. Chairman. I can hardly believe that, but I do believe that the philosophy that you and I both have, that what's best for Alaska is what we're here for, is what will carry us through.
I'm certainly glad you cleared that up with me, Barbara. Representative Miller, do you have any further comments at this time? Not that it's over, but I'm just giving you the opportunity to come on.
Representative Miller has stepped out of the room for a moment.
He lost, don't you know?
Mr. Mr. Martin. Does that conclude your testimony at this point?
Mr. Chairman, I would like to give one comment to Representative Locke's statement. Anchorage, in the beginning, used to call for this unity. It used to call for area-wide election. And then we knocked it down to four-seat districts. And we found out that area-wide did not pay off at all. And we even found out that four-member districts at large did not pay off. I can speak for East Anchorage very clearly. Well, when we were tied in the early 70s to Eagle River Shugak, Eagle River Shugak voted as a block, and it was hard for two elections for any person from East Anchorage to get elected, because as Eagle River and Shugak, people describe it from all extremes, rednecks to socialistic to whatever, but they all consolidated their votes for if he lives in Eagle River, he's far superior than anything that lives in Anchorage. And that's why for four elections, there was no people from East Anchorage representing us. Finally, I did the same thing. I sent out promos, and people from Eagle River were quite upset about it. In the election of 78, where there was eight candidates, and I was the only one that lived in East Anchorage. And I sent out promos to the people of East Anchorage. If you want representation, you have no choice but to vote for Martin, or you're going to have four people from Eagle River again. I didn't claim I was the best candidate. I claimed I was the only candidate from East Anchorage. The same thing in the near future is going to happen to Matt Sue. There is no doubt you're entitled to three representatives a day on today's population. In a couple of years, you'll have four representatives. And I can assure you, ma'am, that problem is going to arise in Matt Sue, where the people are going to be very disgruntled because they did not have someone from their area, whether it be Wasilla, whether it be Houston, whether it be Willow or what, to represent them. They're all going to say Palmer had four representatives.
Are you, it seems like I'm getting some kind of a flash of something here. Do you think that it would be possible, Mr. Martin, that this could appreciably change the number of representatives and the number of senators that we now have in the legislature? I'm speaking now of 40 members of the House, 20 members of the Senate. Well, do you anticipate this to go up to maybe 60 members of the House and 40 members or something of that nature? Instead of 40 problems we have now, we'd have 60, and I don't think we can handle that. But what do you think?
Mr. Chairman, that's a very fair question to ask, and as you know, in the past sessions that some members have put through bills to increase the House of Representatives by numbers and the Senate by numbers, and the majority of the people wisely voted that down. We are not at the state yet where one House member has too many people, too many constituents to serve, unless they are in multi-districts. This is the thing that was brought out in the minutes I gave you from the Supreme Court hearing, that multi-member districts are discriminating against local candidates who are in those compared to who is in a single-member district. A single-member district can more adequately serve his constituents. Multi-members, it takes more money, the rich is more apt to get, and block groups are easily, in a special interest group, easily elect block group multi-legislators. So I'd say I would be against raising the amount of House seats and Senate seats because we are far below the average of the Southern 48th House of Representatives now.
Thank you, Mr. Martin. do you have anything further you wish to comment on at this point in time?
No, sir. It's all yours.
Thank you, Mr. Martin. I would like to personally compliment you on such a in-depth study of this particular problem. I think you've done a very excellent job in your homework, and I learned some things that I didn't even know, and I'm sure that most of us did. Mr. Ward would like to say something.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just real pleased, Representative Martin, that you relayed this message to the reapportionment board and into the governor, because as I have seen the testimony today, I can see that once they study the various court decisions and the other things that you have laid out here, they will be able to do nothing other than the legal and constitutional thing of throwing aside their present plan and giving one man one vote. And I applaud you for bringing this to the attention of the administration at this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ward, but I doubt if the administration or the board is listening.
I would also like to say that I'm sure there are some other people that wish to testify that have not had the opportunity to get down here or whatever. So as they, yes, I recognize that. As they come in this afternoon, if they will, I will interrupt the proceedings of some other bill to take that particular testimony, but I would request that they be short on it or submit it to us in writing. I do note that we have some people in the audience. Is there anyone in the audience who would like to say a few words about this reapportionment? Mr. Perry, I believe, or Mr. Lovett is here. Would you care to say any words at all?
Thank you.
Your name and affiliation for the record, please.
My name is Perry Lovett.
Excuse me. Start again.
All right. Thank you. My name is Perry Lovett, representing myself. I have listened to part of what I've heard, and I've read the bill. There are a couple of things that would be, that Mr. Martin brought up, that would certainly be great, but I don't know if this bill gets around the problem that I see, and that's the population shift that has occurred in Alaska in the past few years, particularly since the pipeline in Anchorage and the Mat-Su borough and is happening in the Kenai borough, that I think you're going to be confronted with this problem as long as you're forced to reapportion every 10 years, because the problem that Mr. Martin referred to is in the Mat-Su borough has occurred since the 1980 census, a great deal of it. I also live in Cordova, and I would like to reiterate some discussion that I missed, but I understand there was some discussion of the two Senate districts, which would encompass House District 6, 7, and 16, that's been proposed by the reapportionment board. And all the testimony from Cordova supported that, and I'd like to reiterate that because it seems that each hearing comes along, it becomes a new page, and sometimes doesn't. Each one of these thoughts need to be reemphasized, and I did want to do that. I would, Mr. Martin is still here, and so are you gentlemen, and I just wonder if there is, I'm looking at basically lines 1, 2, 3 on page 2, if you have any thoughts on how to get around this population shift, because I think you're going to be confronted, it's going to be very serious by 1990, and if there's a bill being written, if there's some way around it, that might be addressed, and I don't know whether constitutionally that can be done or not.
Thank you, Mr. Lovett. Mr. Martin, would you care to address that?
Yeah. And thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's a very sincere concern that many people have, and as I was telling Mr. Larson in the book here on the Constitutional Convention, it's a concern they had 25 years ago and decided not to answer the question because statehood above all. So we're still confronted with it. And if we believe in democracy, we have to believe and the equality of vote, not only one person, one vote, but local representation. We could have statewide election, all Senate statewide. Can you imagine what would happen with our Senate districts then, or who would be the winning senators? In the donut area, I know that you mentioned that the people who gave testimony during reapportionment hearings on that. Since then, I've talked to a number of people who are quite upset with it. certainly the majority of the people that spoke in favor of the donut area knew about the meeting, were there to give testimony, and almost verbatim said the same thing. For tradition was the number one reason. And it was put up, it said, since that time, that that was a well-orchestrated conference hearing, and that the majority of the people did not talk. There was one person that happened to be from your area that was quite upset. And because of her position, she does not want to say publicly that she absolutely opposes this. So, you know, we can say the people that gave testimony at that time favored the donut district, but it was well orchestrated.
Thank you, Mr. Martin. Representative Ward.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have not read the tape of that testimony that was given. I didn't read it, but I will, and to see how much tradition was in there. But can you answer to me? I can only relate on a personal basis. My dad, who lives in South Anchorage, doesn't want to be with Cordova. Can you comment on that a little bit? Tell me what you have in common with Mile 7, the old Seward Highway and Clatt Road area.
Mr. Lovett, would you care to respond?
I'd be glad to, Mr. Chairman.
Button up.
Yes, I did.
Thank you.
I'd be glad to. I would agree that there's some shuffling of numbers, and I don't think anything's perfect. And if you suggest that this redistrict plan is perfect, I think that we all have been misled. But I think that there isn't just the fact of trying to form numbers. I think the basis of Cordova being put in the Ice Farm District to begin with was an excellent example of shuffling numbers. I would privately suggest some ways it could have been got around. And in fact, we did. We testified time of the original reapportionment of ways it could have got around and left Cordova with, quote, as Mr. Martin says, the traditional district, which we were interested in maintaining in Prince William Sound. But and that certainly would have involved some readjustments of some other traditional districts. You're correct, though, as far as Anchorage. If there was some way around it, I'm sure that the board would like to have got away from it.
Okay, if I may, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. So then just my last follow-up would be that what Representative Martin is proposing here by making single districts instead of multi-districts, would this not, in fact, do exactly what we both agreed should be done?
Not at all. Not at all. A single house district, what you're suggesting is to the house district, as I understand, if I understand your question correctly, would still put you in, you're going to have to be with some more other house to form a Senate district.
Thank you, Mr. Lovett. Mr. Larson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to go back a little bit and I think ask Representative Martin a philosophical question here, because I seem to be detecting two different things today. One is, of course, within the bill in which President Todd says contiguous, compact, integrated social economic areas are the criteria for determining election districts. Now, if we go to single member districts, there is oftentimes a very, very good chance that a small area within a district can dominate the entire district, so that we just have representatives, say, from an urban area, although the district itself may contain large amounts of rural. And in relation to what Representative Ward had to say, or was it you, Mr. Chairman, who spoke on the 40 members of the House and the 60 members of the district, and I guess my question to Representative Martin would be this. Many districts in Alaska, for example, the Matanuskas, who sit in the borough, which is District 16, is larger than all of the New England states combined. Representative Halbert's district, which stretches from the west coast to the Alaskan border, is larger than many countries. Can you call a district like that contiguous, compact, with common social economic areas? My answer basically would be no. So philosophically then, how can you provide representation on the one man, one vote rule according to this criteria in such large, diversified areas without increasing the size of the legislature.
Mr. Barton, would you care to respond?
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. You can do just the opposite. As you mentioned, New England states, New Hampshire is the most overly represented state in the Union. They have about 142 representatives for their small population. So they've gone to the other extremes. I don't know if increasing the House membership would solve the problem. The major problem we have right now is the flexibility on which a reapportionment board does have to reorganize House and Senate seats. And let's take Cordova for an example. Cordova was the victim of the whole problem as we have it today. Southeast needed Cordova. They needed that 2,200 bodies desperately to rationalize the six House seats that they have. When you took Cordova out, you took a significant portion of their population for representation of six House members. They were malapportioned in the first place. Then the current board, rightly so, counted the two military population in Southeast Alaska, therefore further decreasing their population count by another 800 bodies. It's almost 3,000 people they lost in just those two moves. So I would say to Mr. Lovett that perhaps Cordova is this pendulum, the point right now in which everything is swinging. And if you don't want to be with Southeast, with Juneau, and your history is most interesting, Cordova's history relationship with Juneau, it never did seem to be friendly. Maybe, as the gentleman from Petersburg said, we could solve this problem by distancing on east-west boundaries rather than north-south, so that Cordova would be with the Prince William Sound area. It could be with Yakutat. I think in those two areas you have enough population where you would have your own senator. The major concern I have right now with the Donut District, Mr. Lovett, is that there's no way that you will have a senator for that major area down there that lives in the area. The population facts today with Mat-Su having 32,000 people, with your area having just above 20,000, you're not going to outvote the Mat-Su people who want to vote at the block. You know that as well as I do. And so therefore, it just seemed to me to be more logical to have a senator that lives nearby, and it would be more concerned about your fishing concerns, about your school concerns. He would not have the double duty of also having a Mat-Su mining, farming, school concerns. The Supreme Court made it very clear that if you want the best representation possible, you should go single member and single Senate.
Thank you, Mr. Martin. Mr. Lovett, would you care to respond?
Well, I'll defer to Mr.
Going to have a brief follow-up here. I'm not advocating increasing the sizes of the legislature. The point I was trying to make is that whatever we do with our districting, we're going to find that there's going to be people from urban areas representing rural areas, people from interior areas representing fishing areas, because of the vastness of the state of Alaska and the size of the legislature, there's just no way that you're ever going to keep that from not having
Jerry's.
Mr. Chairman, yes, I would like to take the opportunity to respond to Mr. Martin. I'm trying to follow Mr. Martin's thinking, and as I hear him, he talks about Cordova and Yakutat. I'm not sure if he's ever been to Yakutat and Cordova in the same day, but there's very little similarity there, and certainly not Yakutat's not part of Prince William Sound. I think the chairman was correct when he started, and I got the same perception that Mr. Martin was talking about enlarging the legislature and the Senate. If you do that, then you know, you're playing a different ball game altogether than what we are now. And I've always been surprised that Mr. Larson brought out Mr. Hulbert's district. That has always been an interesting district to try to find someone to represent that. We find Cordova again, Cotton and Ackland. So we were Ice Run District, now we're Donut District. So we just like someday to just be plain people.
That might be rather difficult because you've already established the ice worm by your own volition down there. Now you got the donut deal. Now we'll call it the coffee and donut deal, maybe. That might help.
Well, you're all invited down if you are in Cordova. We're having the Ice Worm Festival this weekend, so you're all invited. But bring your own donuts with you because I think the bakery may be on vacation now.
Thank you, Mr. Lovett. Mr. Cowdery has something he'd like to ask.
Yes, Mr. Lovett, I was just wondering, I think that perhaps you was, before you came this morning, we was commenting on the latest, the changing of the wording of the Constitution that pertains to civilian population, that the latest resident population would be counted, not the latest civilian population. So I just wanted, do you think that military people, residents here should be counted?
Mr. Cowdery, you and I are about the same age, and both of us have probably been in the military, so my answer is resounding yes. I think that because your military certainly doesn't disenfranchise you from the vote if you accept Alaska as your place of residence. I don't think you should be able to vote in two states because of your military status. And I hardly concur with that, and I think that was the basis of some of the problems that I saw in the original reapportionment to disenfranchise people in the military from voting.
One other point there, too, you note that most military people, when they do come up here to serve a hitch up here in Alaska, they all seem to be very happy to get here. They also seem to be a part of any community that they happen to go to. They want to become involved, and they usually do. I know I can recall coming up here in 46 and in 47, I think they made me president of the ski club. Well, that got me started. And then after you get into that, you'll find that most of the people that come up here, and great numbers of them, give up service in the armed forces to stay in this country because they fall in love with it. And therefore, I think that's a very intricate part of our population. I can recall also that back in those years when the general sneezed out here, we all got shook up because we didn't know where the money was coming. If he shut down, we're in trouble. So they do play a most important part in our whole for the community efforts and also into the community functions. So therefore, my particular position is that they should be counted. They're not outcasts. They're a part of the community, and they should be have the voting rights, either one way or another. If they don't elect to become citizens and don't want to vote in our state, then their hometown is listed back there, and that's where they do their voting. But there are a great number that want to vote for our particular state issues and so on. Do you have anything further you'd care to relate to your mother?
Well, I would follow up on that. You and I, before you got where you're at and before I got where I'm at, we used to do a little umpiring up here, and a lot of the military people we worked with, and I happened to ride down to Ketchikan. A couple of ex-military have stayed up here or going down to referee the state championship, so I would concur with that. I do think that that the reapportionment board and the work they've done has done a heck of a lot of work. I don't think anything is perfect, but I believe we certainly in our area support it. The comments about orchestrated hearings, people who are interested come to hearings, and Mr. Martin has said that someone didn't speak up because he didn't want to be heard. In this state, it's a very small state. If you want to be heard, you want to express your views, this is a place to do it, a forum to do it in. If you're afraid to do it, then probably you won't be heard except when you go and from the ballot box.
Thank you, Mr. Lovett.
Thank you.
Mr. Cowdery would like to have a follow-up.
Yes, Mr. Lovett. I think that you've give your opinion on it, but I'd just like to get it clarified. Have you ever felt underrepresented because of that your senator or representative haven't done their job because there's too many or too few people in your district?
In the years that I have been in Cordova, I felt that last year, because of this lawsuit with the ice farm district, that we I think we had I have to compliment both the House and Senate members we had. They knew that we would very likely not be in their district, and I will say this, that they both very conscientiously supported us. I think if you look at the capital monies we got last year, we'll bear that out. We have never been abused by any of our representatives we've had, and I think that's the reason why we're so emphatic about the relationship we have and to keep it. And thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Lovett, thank you very much for your spending time to come here and testify.
Mr. Chairman, before Mr. Lovett leaves, there's a very important question that many people oftentimes wonder. And that is, what happens to old basketball referees? Jerry used to call a lot of my ball games that I was coaching.
Might also say food for thought, Mr. Lovett, that it's been some time since anyone's asked either one of us to umpire a baseball game. There's got to be a message there for us.
Hey, did you see that? He called a technical foul on me.
Mr. Chairman, and this doesn't have a darn thing to do with reapportionment, but the last time I was asked to referee or to umpire a ball game, someone came out with a can and a cane and handed me a tin cup and a cane. So I you're right. I think you're telling us something. Thank you.
Thank you. We've departed just a little bit, but you usually do with this committee. I was going to say something about a road show, but I'm not going to do that either. I know Mr. McCutcheon is here to testify. Mr. McCutcheon, would you care to come to the witness stand? Give your name and affiliation for the record, please.
My name is Jerry McCutcheon. I represent myself. And I really resent having to vote for somebody in Kenai when I'm from Anchorage. I really don't understand that. I mean, this has got to be the latest thing. You know, it goes a long way, so I can't blame the Republicans for it, because Bill Egan shortchanged us, and we've been shortchanged every time around. And Republicans last time out, shortchanged us. For once, I would like, as an Anchorage boy who can remember when you went to the south side of 9th Avenue, you were going a long ways out of town. I'd like to see Anchorage as one integral unit. I think we really ought to have, when you start with your reapportionment, you ought to start with the major population centers and solve their problem first. Now, from talking to people in the reapportionment board, we're due 9 senators and 18 representatives, and we ought to get it, and we're just a fuzz short. Well, we've been shortchanged for so long, I think we ought to get that little extra bit. And so I don't care how it's done or who draws the lines or where the lines get drawn, just so long as we get all we're entitled to, for Anchorage people. That's all I care about.
Then evidently, I'd like to clarify that, because you have a lot of people out there that evidently don't want Anchorage to get anything. So I would say that where you've got the majority of the people and the majority of the problems and the majority of the school children and the majority of the fires and the crime and anything else you wish to come up with, that conversation seems to hit me where I live. It's not a sectionalized situation. We're not trying to, I don't think Anchorage in any respect is trying to disregard the needs of the balance of our country. So I think I would take your words to be, take those at heart. I think they're very excellent words. Mr. Ward has something to say.
Yes, thank you. Jerry, I I'm glad to hear you testifying today and in this manner, but I posed to you the question, which you and I have talked somewhat about in the past, but not fully. The problem that we have, whether it be in the Egan administration or this administration, or the House, the Senate, or reapportionment boards are, who are there because of political favors, how do we get away from incumbencies drawing lines? Is there any way to do it? Because that's, as I see it, that's the problem. It's got nothing to do with Republican, Democrat, Cordova, Iceland, Donuts, nothing else. It's incumbencies, whether it be administrations or whatever, trying to make sure they stay in.
I'd like to have that question asked by Mr. Martin. Would you care to comment on that at all, Mr. Martin?
If Mr. McCutcheon would allow me to interfere here, yes. Reapportionment boards, the way they are established, I do have some good background on that. And as I've said before, I didn't want to mix that problem with the legitimate problem right now of those concerns expressed by our courts in changing our Constitution. I think it would be, Mr. Chairman, very advisable for maybe the committee to consider another bill on establishing a reapportionment board, and I'd be glad to give you some backup documents. The most recent case is that of the governor of California introduced his own bill, and I began copying that, and it looked real good, and it is good, only because they have the population. I think his reapportionment new board is going to go through because the legislators see it's fair. But what he's doing is taking ex-retired appellate court judges on regional basis. There will be nine. California is a long state. It has a lot of retired court people. And it looked like that this way, ex-appellate court judges will be able to constitutionally and hopefully... since they are the backbone of our Constitution, interpret it properly. Other states have still allowed the governors. In one state, the court came in with a recommended plan, and I think that's in Colorado, but I'm not sure, recommended plan. So it's an entirely different problem, and I'd like to separate the issues. That would be all right.
Thank you, Mr. Martin. Mr. McCutcheon, would you care to comment on that subject?
I'll yield to Representative Martin. I've had some previous discussions with him about reapportionment, and I support what he's doing.
Do you have anyone else like to, is there anyone in Juneau, any of the representatives in Juneau would like to make any comments?
We have someone at this moment signing in. Just a moment, I can give you his name.
I'm looking for, I'm asking, are there any representatives or members of, of this committee?
Not at this time, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Locker. Mr. McCutcheon, thank you very much for your testimony. Let me see, where am I? Oh, yes. This is something I don't want to miss. We have a very good friend of ours, an ex-legislator. He's from Dillingham, and his name is Joe Chukwuk. Joe, it's nice to hear you're among the living again. Would you like to say a few words?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and greetings to everyone there I used to work with. I appreciate the time here to, although I'm a little bit late, I initially came here as an observer. However, listening to testimony and remarks being made by different individuals, I got to the point where I was compelled no longer can observe. I'd like to put my two bits in here for whatever it's worth, Mr. Chairman. About the bill, I do have some concerns here. I've made my own opinions based on hearing different groups, but it seems to me I'm somewhat puzzled by this bill here. It almost appears to me that it is a self-serving and craftily put together to avoid any future problems that may arise when the population grows in Alaska. As comments made earlier, 40% of the population of Alaska is an Anchorage, and that's where the most needs are. And that's an old issue that has been around as to how we should appropriate the money for the state of Alaska. At one time, in response to a what I thought was a silly proposal, which based our appropriation money based on population, I rebutted by saying, well, let's do it by per square mile basis for each district. And of course, that is equally ridiculous. Otherwise, that would have probably be to my advantage for my district, because I come from one of the larger districts also, the Anchorage districts. So, as usual, we made some compromises back then. But I think when I say self-serving, what I mean is it's evident that the population in rural Alaska will increase, and I'm sure you've seen the growing pains of Anchorage area, people moving out of that district to other places where it was less crowded, and as a result, the population throughout Alaska has increased dramatically, I think, based on the percentages. And so therefore, I would still like to stick to the population basis rather than boundary lines. And obviously, that would be to my benefit. Perhaps we can reverse the issue that I'm self-serving. So I would like to ask the legislature to reconsider and perhaps arrive at some good a compromise that would serve justice for everybody in terms of representation and appropriation, etc. Otherwise, I do appreciate the fact that some of you are concerned, and I'd like to thank you for this opportunity.
Joe, thank you very much for your testimony, and I'm glad you took the time out of your schedule to come in. Mr. Martin has something you'd like to say.
Yes, thank you, Joe. I very much appreciate you taking the time to testify, because I think that this seriously should be considered a royal people of Alaska. You know, other states have large royal areas, too, and they are able to solve these problems. I lived in Arkansas, which is a large farm royal area compared to the cities, and they're able to balance it because they make sure that they are legislated. And I think Alaska proved itself, Anchorage proved itself, that they are sincerely concerned about the needs of royal Alaska too. The subsistence bill last year was of such nature that many people from Anchorage really realized your concerns, your needs out there, and supported Royal Alaska. And I believe one of the appropriations that many urban legislators will be cognizant to the fact that it does cost a lot more in Royal Alaska for our schools, for our construction. And as you know, in the House right now, we do not have a portion according to population, but according to needs. And I think that the right type of legislators elected would take the statewide interest rather than local interest as being superior. And you're right on Anchorage. I very much feel that Anchorage is going to decrease in population over the years as they have the urge to go up in the Matsu and up into the interior and down the Kenai. So for all the fears that people have about Anchorage overgrowing, that's going to be balanced in 10 years with ease. Thank you, Joe, for your comment.
Thank you, Mr. Martin. I surely don't want to get into the budgeting process for the rural versus urban areas. Any other questions right now? If not, we have someone else to testify. Joe McKinnon, are you online? And where are you?
He is here at Juneau, and he's approaching the microphone at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Joe McKinnon. I'm a member of the current reapportionment board.
Joe, you're breaking up. You want to put the button or do something there? Juno, do you copy?
Yeah, I think we have it straight up. And also disagreed with, in particular, the way Anchorage was divided by the last four.
I didn't understand that last part. You disagreed the way Anchorage was divided? Could you?
Divided Anchorage in the last reapportionment. I felt that in a number of places, substantially, or divided a number of neighborhoods within Anchorage unnecessarily. For instance, the boundary between District 10 and 11, I think, unnecessarily divided Spinard right in half.
Where do you live, Joe?
Currently, I live in, I think it's Thompson subdivision. It's down in Chester Valley.
If I may, Griffin. Yeah, this is Mitch Abood speaking. I find it more than difficult to understand, speaking from a personal standpoint, how you could possibly consider taking all of the Turnigan area out of the Spinard area. It is just splitting it all the way wide open. It's a contiguous area. It should be in that whole area, and I can't understand the philosophy. I wonder if you could explain a little of that to me.
I'd be glad to do it. I'm primarily here to testify on the resolution, and I think the decision that the board made will be explained in our report. But briefly, the way the Spinard District was drawn in the new plan was that I think if you take a look at the municipal planning district and the Spinard district in the municipal planning district, it separates Turnigan from Spinard. And the way the Spinard district was drawn in our current plan was that we simply started at the eastern end of the Spinard planning district and went as far west as necessary to get the population for that district. And I think the, as far as planning districts go and as far as community council boundaries, generally the Spinard has been separated from Turnigan. And I think you can even, you can drive down Northern Lights Boulevard and you can tell there's a distinct socioeconomic differences between the people who live on the north side of Northern Lights Boulevard and the south side of Northern Lights Boulevard in that area.
Thank you, Joe. Mr. Ward would like to ask a question.
Yes, very quickly before I turn it over to Representative Martin, on a personal note, Mr. Hensley explained to me why he was on the reapportionment board. Can you tell me how you got on the board?
I think it's certainly no secret that I've long been involved in the reapportionment process. I provided support to a member of the 1973 board. And helped develop the 1973 plan for Anchorage. Did some work or testified, extensively to the 1981 board and proposed a plan which ultimately was not adopted by that board. And have generally been interested in it. I've done a substantial amount of research into reapportionment law.
Thank you, Mr. Martin, and I would like to, it's now 20 minutes of or a quarter of, all 20 minutes of, but I do want to close off at a proper time.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. McKinnon, I'm really pleased that you came and commented on this because you hit on the two major key points of this proposed resolution. And as the, I don't think that you have a copy of it, but as the narrative says from my legal service, that these were sponsored request additions. The first point that you have, population count versus residency count, we labored over that quite a bit. And as you know, if we count the population per se, we can do what other states says, and that means 100% of the military. As you know from your valued experience in reapportionment, some states do 100%, some states do none. In our case, we felt that it's best to say all Alaskan residents, and you know it doesn't take that much to be an Alaskan resident, 30 days and your voter's registration card. So that shows a commitment of the individual. If we counted all population, which would be fair by the Supreme Court, the Alaska State Supreme Court, it would very much imbalance fair apportionment to the true residents throughout our state. So I would hope that residency would be used rather than population. That also is the wording from the Harvard Journal of Legislation, and you can certainly correct me, but I think that you just graduated from Harvard. So through their journal, we picked up this wording, and that also leads into your second question, why did we say 2% and 5%? It would take too long to explain it to you right now, Ms. McKinnon, but I will send you these copies from the journal and also send you copies from Common Cause, which you know is a national organization that has set up model reapportionment plans for state constitutions. And they also say 2% and 5%. The Harvard Law Journal said 1% per district, which we felt may be too severe because you know the problems you have in the rural areas and dividing lines. So there is logic to that, what may sound like confusion, and I'll send you these as soon as possible. And also, might bring to you suggest attention is the New Jersey case of August 1983, last year, that went all the way up to the Supreme Court. And in that case, there was two districts that were less than 700 bodies different. And the people were upset. It was an ethnic problem, and rightly so, they pursued it all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. The Supreme Court said that less than 1% is not adequate. That was a far-reaching determination by them, and I hope we don't have to go that far. The governor of Colorado rejected a reapportionment base that was probably even more severely guidelined. There was two House districts that were less than 41 bodies different. And he said because of that disparity that he would not sign it, and he put it in ballot. They did later take it to the court, and the court upheld it. So it shows you, in my mind, this 2%, 5% is a little more flexible than other states that far have allowed.
Mr. McKinnon, would you care to comment?
Yeah, my concern over the use of the word resident is that there's no definition of the word resident, for one thing. The last court used a residency standard which was different actually from the residency standard for voting. And theoretically, under the last plan, somebody could have been qualified to vote in Alaska, but not qualified to be counted in reapportionment. And if you are going to go with the use of the word resident, I think you should try to in some way define it so the board has some guidelines or a particular standard to use and try to determine the residency population.
Mr. McKinnon, I wondered if you'd be kind enough to send the wording of that to this committee, please.
Okay. Well, I'd be glad to try to come up with a definition of resident. I think you could simply adopt the standard used for voting in the state, which was different than the standard used by the last board.
Well, I was quite pleased that the State Affairs Committee this last year defined what a resident was. Is it different than the one you're using?
Well, essentially we're using the standard used by the last court because the court told us to do that. And it is different from the standard of residency used in voting. And, I would just think it might be a good idea if you have developed a residency standard that you think ought to be used, that it should appear in the article itself.
Yeah, I'm rather surprised that the board didn't take the new residency law into consideration in their deliberations.
We were ordered by the court to use the same residency standard used by the 1981 board.
Evidently, we've got to straighten the courts out then. Are there any further comments to Mr. McKinnon? Mr. McKinnon, do you have any further, just a moment, Mr. Mark?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Joe, I did have one more question. Outside of those two major concerns, and I agree with you, the major concerns, would you agree with the other provisions that put us in line with the past Supreme Court recommendations?
Oh, yeah, as I said, I think it's long overdue, and it should have been done long ago. I think the legislature should definitely act on, in this area and clean up that article.
Mr. McKinnon, thank you very much for taking the time to come have us listen to you. I was kind of afraid that none of the board would be here because we heard they were having meetings elsewhere. How'd you get away from them?
We recessed for a while and until this afternoon, so I was able to get by.
Well, that's very nice of you to come to the teleconference. I note Mr. Earl Davis is in the audience. Did you have anything that you'd care to say, Mr. Davis, that you just come to observe?
Just to observe.
Thank you. Is there anyone in Juneau or anyone around? We now have about five more minutes. If I don't hear any response within the next few seconds, I'll conclude that there are no more witnesses to this particular bill. I would like to say also that we are going to be hearing, and we will go into recess of this committee until 1:30 this afternoon, at which time we'll be taking up House Bill 356, which is the election of the Attorney General. And if we haven't, I know we'll be taking testimony from quite a few people on that. Is there anyone else that wishes to give any testimony whatsoever regarding this particular bill we're hearing now? Hearing none, the State Affairs Committee will recess until 1:30. Thank you very much. Thank you. What I want to do is I want these left here because we may have some other witnesses. I'm going to have to interrupt to go back to you again. So I'll just put them aside so we can take up the next one.
Should I take the stand there to the next
one? What are we taking up now? Same bill or new one? We got more hearings scheduled.
Yeah, this is Candy in Anchorage. I know that we have one person who would like to speak to Mr. Chuckwell. I would like to check with any other of our LIOs or Hayes or Boone at this time to see if we have any participants.
Candy, this is Alita Haynes.
Oh, hello, Alita.
I'm expecting the magistrate Carl Heinmiller, but he's not arrived yet.
Okay, well, we'll check back with you.
Let's see, who the hell's bill is this?
Yes.
This is mine.
Big Daddy's.
Yeah.
Did you see this pin from the Alaska Bar Association?
No, I didn't get it.
Yeah, you did.
It's on my thing here?
Yeah.
Partner of law.
Well, I have an extra copy, but I just put one there. It's from the Bar Association.
There it is there.
Bar Association.
Oh, okay.
Who did they poll here? Board of Governors of the limited.
Representative Poon, this is the Juneau moderator again.
Go ahead.
We have Representative Schultz arriving in Anchorage at 1:15 on Flight 61 with Alaska Airlines.
Thank you.
All right, good.
Okay. I am.
This is great.
I guess he'll move the, I guess he'll leave, I guess he'll miss the meeting.
Not this here.
Can I go up there, Mitch?
Yeah, when I get started.
Mitch? Point out that you don't think
this is
a public, public thing. The board has weighed members of the Alaska Bar Association on them. It's certainly not a man on the street.
Hi, Margaret. Well, I'm able to sit up and take nourishment.
Come on, respond.
Do we have any anybody around the
network?
Oh, there it is. Oh, God, Joe Chuckwick. He's active.
Yeah.
He's active today. Let's see.
Hey, we got the result. Hey,
I'm still on my way.
Have we got the result to hold the Joe Tuck on this issue?
Joe.
You know, Joe Tuck, the House Bill.
We're having our teleconference today with the House State Affairs Committee on House Bill 456 shortly.
Yeah.
This is Candy once again. We will now begin today's public hearing with the House State Affairs Committee on House Bill 456, election of an attorney general. At this time, I will turn the microphone over to Chairman Booth.
State Affairs will come to order again. It's now 1:30. We have a new bill in front of us this morning. This afternoon, election of the AG, House Bill 456. While Representative Ward, the prime sponsor of the bill, is taking his seat at the testimonial stand, I'd like to restate that if there's anyone who wishes to submit testimony that can't get to either the microphones or here, we'll be very pleased to accept your written testimony for this particular bill. If you will send it to the House State Affairs Committee, Pouch V, Juno, 99811, we will enter it into the record. Again, the prime sponsor of the bill is Representative Ward. Mr. Ward, are you prepared to testify then?
Yes, I am. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members, and I...
Name for the record and et cetera.
Thank you. My name is Representative Jerry Ward. I represent District 13, which is in Anchorage, Alaska. I'm the prime sponsor of the legislation, which what it will do, once it passes House and Senate, signed by the governor, will place before the voters of the state of Alaska, do they want to have a elected attorney general? This is a decision that I think is highly desirable. I myself would, of course, regardless of how people, the merits of how we're going to vote on this on an individual basis, I believe will be overwhelmingly in favor of it. I do appreciate that the Attorney General's office has sent an opinion on this, and within the first portion of their letter, the Attorney General for the state of Alaska, who is in appointed position at present time, says he has no problem with the people of state of Alaska having a vote on this matter for a decision-making process, period. And then there are about three other pages, but I won't go into those. And then also I noticed that we received a backup here from the Alaska Bar Association, which they state that they have done a poll in March or in 1982 of the members of the Bar Association, and they have stated about, it looks like 70% are against an elected attorney general, members of the Bar Association attorneys, and 30% are in favor of it. So that in itself, I think, is very, to me, I would say that that would make it a good bill, just on that statement alone by the Bar Association. As I see it, to enter the merits of the bill, I believe that we
should have an opportunity as a citizen of the state of Alaska to vote on whether or not the person that's going to be issuing legal opinions, whether those legal opinions are in the form of buying railroads or remodeling mansions or whatever they may be. On a day-to-day basis, we have some 150 full-time attorneys currently working under the Attorney General's office. This is a lot of them. That is full-time attorneys now working for the Attorney General's office, and this person works for his client, according to statute. His client is the governor of the state of Alaska. It is not the citizen of the state of Alaska. He has a client relationship with the governor, and it should be that way. The governor should have an attorney. But I feel personally that I think that this is something that the people in many other states, including Alaska, have voiced opinion on for years, that they feel that they should have an attorney general that represents them. And I am in full support of this myself, and I think that it would be proven at the ballot box once again that the citizens of the state of Alaska want the attorney general to work for them instead of having a client relationship working for one man. And the simple fact is that from everything that I've been able to tell by going throughout my district and taking the various surveys of the people that are in my district, that I believe that this issue will pass the ballot box, but at very least I think that it should be placed before the voters so that they can have an expression, because there seems to be a misunderstanding, at least from my point of view, with some other people within the legislature as to they apparently have different constituencies than I have, which I find amazing. And then, of course, there is opposition from the various bureaucracies that are entrenched. But I think that it will pass, and I think it will be a clear message. And I would urge support of this so that it can go before the voters. We are one of the last states. In fact, I believe that there's three states left that have this obscure, out-of-date mode of appointing a lawyer to issue legal opinions that we all have to live by. They have turned to an elected position to where there's a responsibility and a coordination between the electorate, the people, and the Attorney General's office. I believe that this is a good mechanism, and it is what our country is founded on, and the opinions that have the effect of law, whether they're promulgated by the Attorney General or by one of the assistants or one of the district attorneys that are appointed by this Attorney General under our current statute, then we need to make sure that that person is absolutely independent and works for the citizens of the state of Alaska, which, in my opinion, is not being done right now, has not been done, and will not be done until there is an elected Attorney General. I'd be glad to try to answer any questions that there are. I've brought some backup material here. I just had received the poll from the Bar Association, which the polls state from the election attorney general and district attorney generals and judges. My bill, of course, does not address should we elect judges. That's another bill that I've introduced. And the district attorneys, Representative Liska introduced that one. This one is just an advisory vote so the citizens can let their senators and representatives and their governor know this is what they want once again.
Thank you, Representative Ward. Are there any questions for Representative Ward, Representative Cowdy?
Yes, it was just, in your opinion, why would anyone want to deny the public the right to express their opinion on this issue, something as important as this, would deny the right to vote on an issue like that? I mean, that's all we're saying. We're not, we're just giving that public a right. What are your opinion? I'm sure you have one, of why people would want to deny that right, or the administration, or whoever opposes it.
Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, Representative Cowdy, what I see is this, is that nobody says that we should not give the right for people to vote on it, but then in the very next breath, they say, but because this is so terrible and it changes the way that it is, We shouldn't ought to give them this right. And this is what the impression, not the impression, this is what the position has been from the people that are currently within the structure of the appointed attorney general. Because once it is placed before the voters, it will pass. There will be no mystery. There will be no senators, representatives, or governors that will be able to deny that's exactly what the people want, and we will have an elected attorney general. It seems to me that it's a shame that we have to, we the people, myself as a voter now and as a representative, have to go through this kind of extreme before everybody doesn't understand that it's only a small fraction, maybe some 20% of the population, that like it the way it is. And I'd say that 20%, they have their own reasons. They certainly are not mine. And why they would oppose such a thing going before the voters is because they know what the outcome's going to be. The outcome's going to be overwhelmingly that we want to have control over the Attorney General's office, the people. We don't want a politician or a group of politicians or power brokers having control over the legal decisions that we all have to live by. And this is what they're there, the people that oppose this, their only real concern is the concern that it's going to become very public that they are in a minority.
You want to follow up, Mr.
Chairman? Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. It would seem to me that if this was left up to a vote by the people and the people voted that we do elect our Attorney General, that probably the games that's being played now, I think that would have a big impact on the games that we've witnessed, especially in my short time in the legislature, from the AG's office. And I would like to point out too that the House, or before you or I were elected, the legislature seen the weakness of this and rather than rely on the counsel of the Department of Law or the Attorney General, we have got our own House legal counsel that we go to on many occasions, and I think that alone should prove even the legislature has some problems with the Attorney General. As it stands right now, not this particular Attorney General, but anyone that's appointed. How would you, you got any comments on that area?
Thank you. The comments are basically that if you have an Attorney General in an appointed position, if it works for the legislature, which some Attorney Generals did, but now they've gone to an elected one, or it works for the governor, then that is a client relationship. They only work for that body. Now, stating to what has happened in our present situation, as I see it, and one of the reasons why I've introduced this legislation, I see and have seen that there has been times throughout the last year where there have been opinions issued by the Attorney General's office, which I felt were issued because of the client relationship according to statute. He works, this particular Attorney General works for the governor, and if he did not work for him, then he would be not doing his duty by issuing the opinions that he has. But this puts a built-in conflicting nature between the legislature and the governor. What we should have is not that. We should have an Attorney General. When that Attorney General issues an opinion, that should be an opinion for the people of the state of Alaska, not for a majority caucus, not for a governor, not for a group of minority that got 21 and 11 votes, not for a lieutenant governor or anything else. It should be for the people of the state of Alaska, and we do not have that. And we will not have that as long as we have the appointed procedure, because there is no accountability, period. It works solely at the discretion of the governor under the present circumstances. In other states, they used to work solely at the discretion of the confirmation procedure and appointed by the legislature, or in some cases Supreme Court justice. But when you get to the appointed stage like that, there is a beholding client relationship there.
Mr. Larson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of the things we often see here, Representative Ward, in relation to the Attorney General, is that the old axiom where the Attorney General says, what do you want me to find, instead of what does the law say? However, on our previous public hearing, one of the questions that I asked all of those who testified was their definition of an attorney general. You remember Mr. Boyko said that the attorney general was the attorney for the people. Attorney General Gorsuch said that the attorney general was the attorney for the governor. In your philosophy, may I ask you, sir, what is your definition of the attorney general?
Thank you very much, Representative Larson, Mr. Chairman of the Committee. I think my philosophy is I need to break it into two parts without sounding like a politician. I would like the Attorney General to be the attorney of the people, but currently the Attorney General is the attorney of the governor. That is the reality, and that is why the bill is being introduced, because the governor and some other people within the legislature don't want the Attorney General to be the attorney of the people, and I do.
Thank you. If I may follow up, Mr. Chairman, in relation to that, and of course a couple of other questions that came out of the earlier meeting, was that to have an elected attorney general, we would be doing basically two things. One, setting up a second level of bureaucracy, because the governor would continue to maintain his own private attorneys, and that the attorney general then would be completely separated from the administrative branch. And two, then, being separated, this would give the elected attorney general a posturing place to use his position to run against the governor in the next election. Do you think there's any validity in either of those two charges that were made?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess it's a matter of interpretation on what charges are. I think, yes, there's definitely a reality of that. And if they're, if Attorney General using this as a stepping stone to a election as governor, that could very well be. But so what? You know, how do we get a governor anyway? Where do they come from? Still has to get through the political process and has to do a good job representing the people as the attorney of the people. And if that person, whoever it may be, if he or she did a good job, then they should have a right to run for governor. I don't think any governor, any legislature should be afraid of that. I've always been under the belief that there's 61 people applying for that job at all times anyway, and I could be wrong and be corrected, but I always felt that way, myself included. And adding one more, I don't think would be a bad thing at all, because I think as we time would prove that it would be far in advance, because instead of getting political interpretations of law that I want, or you want, or the governor wants, what we'd be getting is realistic feelings of what the actual law is. And we'd be getting from somebody that was beholding. That's why we have an ombudsman. That's why we have elected positions. Otherwise, we could just have appointed houses and senates and probably accomplish the very same thing as what we're accomplishing under an appointed attorney general system. And maybe the charge that you bring up about using it as a stepping stone for governor, I'm sure if I was governor, I'd have concern with that. I'm not governor, so I don't have that concern. You know, we could do worse.
Thank you. Mr. Ward, do you think that if the Attorney General was elected, that he would have more validity with your opinion? In other words, any opinion he'd come down with, would it have more bearing, more truth to it, more honesty to it, more whatever you want to call more, than the present ones? Now, I'll be quick to point out that this administration is no different than any other administration we've had in the past. This is not to say that Attorney General Gorsuch is on the peg or we're questioning him. This is any Attorney General. I don't care what party he comes from or anything else. We've had this same problem. We've heard this before. This isn't the first time this subject has come up. It's come up many, many, many times with many different administrations, but always comes right back to the same thing. Does he represent the people? Is he supposed to? Or does he represent the governor, and is he supposed to do that? So again, my question to you is, would he have more validity in your mind if he was elected than to be appointed, or in the people's minds?
Mr. Chairman, I thank you very much for that question, because it does lead in something that I wanted to very much bring to the attention of this body. Mr. Frank Barr, who was a delegate to the Alaska Constitutional Convention in 1955, had introduced to the convention at that time the election of the Attorney General. He argued for the election of the Attorney General, and because of an overwhelming amount of opposition from people within the legal community, his proposition was defeated in 1956. So the reason we're even here discussing it is because of a political decision that was made back in 1956, and the will of the majority of the people have been subverted all the way through time until until the next time we go to the election box, and then we'll have an advisory vote to reaffirm it once again. But the validity of it is the reason that it was originally introduced for an election of an elected attorney general was because to take away not the pretense of suspect, but because the law itself says the attorney general's client is the governor. And I pose this to you, Mr. Chairman, if at all possible, that if you and I are having a disagreement right now on what Representative Larson really says and thinks, then I pose this to you. Would it be fair for me to say, okay, by gosh, let's come to an understanding and we'll just go over to my attorney and he'll give us the final word on it? That's what the thing is in a nutshell, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Ward. I'm not sure that I got my question answered yet, but I'll bypass it temporarily. We do have some witnesses throughout the state I'd like to go to, unless there is a question for Mr. Ward that he can answer shortly. Mr. Cowdery.
Representative Ward, I just reviewed this letter dated March the 4th, 1982. From the Alaska Bar Association, and it says below, I'd like to quote, it says below is a very brief discussion of the results of a February poll taken of the members of the Alaska Bar Association on these issues. And then it goes ahead to give the results, and then I refer to, I think that you had taken a poll in your district, which indicated a sort of a reversed, almost identically reversed trend of the support. One contradicts the other, in other words. And I was wondering, it would seem to me, recently I had a situation where they referred to a Dittman poll that was referred to of poll. It was polled by oil and gas members or subscribers to Oil and Gas Journal. So I was wondering if your comments, do you think it would be the man on the street poll or the credibility of a poll taken by the Alaska Bar Association to the thermometer of the public, or would your poll indicate more public credibility, or how would you respond to that?
I thank you. It's just because of my personality, it seems like such a loaded question,
yeah.
And I'm glad to take it. I am afraid that when the poll was done with the Bar Association, I can understand fully how their union would stick together. Are they organized?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. How their union would stay together, because they do have to pay their dues and they do have to keep their industry going. I'm in the real estate industry, so I would support it. But see, this comes out to people that live in Mountain View, Alaska. We don't have too many attorneys there, so I'm sure they didn't get in on the poll that I took. We do have a few that are in the other sections of my district, but the majority, I see the chairman wants to go to teleconference now.
Thank you, Mr. Ward. Is that the completion of your testimony at this point in time?
Yes, unless there's any questions of anybody that would have any responses about whether or not the people of the state of Alaska should have the right to vote on such a matter.
Okay, I'm sure that you'll be able to answer those questions from your seat on the committee. I'd like to go to Dillingham, please, to
Mr. Chuck Watts, I see you're back again. You enjoyed your lunch. Joe, you want to go ahead with your name and affiliation for the record?
Chairman, this is Mike Miller at Juno. I just wanted to let you know that I was on board now.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. Miller, and I also note that Representative Locker is there too. Is that correct?
That's correct, sir, yes.
Thank you. Do you have any particular comments you wish to make thus far?
No, we're just listening with bated breath, sir.
Try spirit. Joe, are you there?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I'm here.
Go ahead, Joe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Joe Chuckwuck from Dillingham, and I represent no one myself here. Once again, I appreciate the opportunity to make a few comments pertaining to this bill here. I do have some reservations about an elected attorney general. I think we're well aware that he does head the Department of Law and has responsibility for prosecuting violations of the state laws, and also that he is a legal advisor to the governor, and also provides legal services to all executive agencies in the state, and in some cases to the legislative and judicial branch. So to me that indicates he not only works for the governor but also for the rest of the people in the state of Alaska in attempting to administer justice. To me, an elected attorney general would be subjected to conditions, I'm sure, that often the politicians are subjected to, and I wonder what kind of a campaign he would put on that would sell to the public, and the follow-up on that once he gets elected. We are well aware of the greatness of the state and the complex issues that do arise, often pitting people against other people, and very unpopular at times. Suppose an elected general was subjected to that type of a situation where he was caught in the middle. Is he going to base a decision on where he gets the most public pressure from to base a decision on, or basically on the existing laws? And we all are well aware that the elected representative is also subject to be recalled if he makes a wrong move. I think there's a precedence for that, the attempts by the public to remove that particular individual because he made the wrong decision. And to me, it would seem that it would be a difficult situation for an attorney general to try and make a decision on, based on the comments I just made here. So I do have some reservations about elected general as opposed to the appointed attorney general. And if there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer if I can.
Thank you, Joe. Representative Connery has one.
Yes, Joe, during the hearing in